This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This is Slammed.
Brown goes inside. Oh, what a slam from Jaylen Brown.
Brought to you by WEEI and Odyssey Sports.
Tatum on the move. Oh, he set off the smoke detector.
With Megan Ottolini, Esteban Bustillos, and Justin Turpin.
Brown, one, two.
Right now.
Welcome to Slammed, a Boston Celtics podcast brought to you by Odyssey. I'm Megan Ottolini, joined as always by Esteban Bustillos of GBH and Justin Turpin, also of Odyssey and WEEI. We're recording this on the morning of Election Day, so tensions are high. We're coming off a 123-93 win, Celtics over the Hawks. That one's no surprise. Well, we're talking about Election Day, and I think everybody's eyes are on the polls. I'm thinking about a great American achievement that might be at stake this year. Because, let's be honest, last night's game was pretty boring. Yeah. It was over at halftime.
Not a lot of tension.
Celtics-Hawks, not a lot of tension there. But it's been since 2018, when James Harden won the MVP, that an American has won the NBA MVP. And so I throw this topic out to you guys to start today. Do you think it's realistic, as we are now 8 games into the very early stages of this season, that Jason Tatum could win MVP? We could take back, we could wrestle back the MVP from the Jokic and the Lukas and the Canadians.
Give it to a Patriot.
And get an American back in there for MVP.
Well, the odds you sent us last night, right? Two in front, SGA is the front runner. Jokic is number 2 right now. That's correct.
So this is there's a couple different places that I looked at. Basketball Reference has like a very strange tracking system where I'll just say the top 3 because then it really goes off the rails. Right now, the top 3 from Basketball Reference, their tracker is SGA, Jokic, Tatum. If you look at the books in Vegas, SGA leads plus 275. Then it goes Luka. Plus 300, Tatum plus 500, Jokic plus 800, and then you got your other great American hope, Anthony Edwards, at plus 1,000.
Real quick, have you seen what goes into the MVP ladder Basketball Reference?
No.
You would hate it. You would throw up.
Is there so much to it?
No, that's not in there.
Possible assist?
But they have a breakdown of it. Yeah. It's like a 2-paragraph breakdown. If you gave it a look, you would throw up. You would hate it.
Is that why Jared Allen and Chet Holmgren are probably 4 and 5 in that tracker?
Well, that and because their teams are undefeated. But right, yeah, probably.
But still,
yeah.
Okay. So that's just laying the land of who the competition is and the history of that now that we're 6 years into not having an American MVP in the NBA. I'll toss it to you first, Herb. Do you feel that there is a real chance that Jason Tatum could win this regular season award this year?
I do. I mean, he's been a front runner every year. He's finished top 5 the last couple of years. And at what point do we stop saying it's too early in the season, right? I know it's only 8 games and it's a really small sample size, but we've seen so far the best Jason Tatum that we've seen. He's the best version of himself. He's making the most threes. He's really making all the right reads and being a smart basketball player. That's huge. And when you look at it, too, I do think what happened in the playoffs and him not winning Eastern Conference Finals and NBA Finals MVP plays into it. Because I'm a believer in voter fatigue. I'm also a believer in, like, you know, we owe you one, right? We owe you one. We're going to give you something. And that reputation, that that kind of cachet that he has now, I think it does go somewhere. It's a make good almost. So I do think he absolutely has a chance this year. I mean, I understand it's only 8 games in, but we are seeing the best version of a guy that's been an MVP candidate, what, last 3-4 years? So, yeah, I think he absolutely could win it.
Yeah, if you going by the odds that you sent us, so Tatum right now 37-5, SGA 25-6-7, give or take. And I looked up, Luka's 28-8-7. So Tatum has the best right now out of those top three. If I were to guess, if we're going by numbers right now, and I haven't had a chance to look up Jokic's, I would say probably a race between SGA and Tatum. Just because I think Jokic is probably going to take a hit from, one, having won multiple times here in the past few years, and two, the Nuggets not necessarily being the front runner. So I think if you have two top players on front running teams, I think it's going to be between them two.
He's been top six the last 3 years.
Just yes, I was going to jump in with that because he finished lower last year, which was... makes sense because of the way that the lineup was, and that the stat packing was definitely not a priority for that team. It was just get back to the finals, win the championship, which they obviously did. I think it's interesting when you look from the national angle that when this topic is broached, it's kind of between Jokic, Anthony Edwards, or SGA, Anthony Edwards. My fear with the Jokic fatigue is that it's not going to go to the guy who's been in the league for 7 years and who has been high achieving and had pretty consistent numbers for most of that time in Jason Tatum. Like, we at the local level look at it and say, well, Tatum's evolved this side of his game and that side of his game and has become a more vocal leader and a more present leader on the court. And we pay attention to his shooting mechanics this season and his three-point attempts and his defensive rating and all this stuff. But I think for a casual voter or somebody coming from the national angle, there's this tendency to go, what about the guy that reminds us of Michael Jordan? And that's what scares me. Because SGA, on one hand, I think, has this narrative around him of he's on this team that's overtaking the Nuggets in the West. OKC, for the record, slammed very early on this, very early last season. He said, watch this team. And then Anthony Edwards, I think, just has this star factor about him, which now that Carl Anthony Towns is out of there as well, even more is going to fall on his plate.
Yeah.
And I think if this was an award where it went into the postseason and you were looking at teams really working towards a championship, it would be a different equation. I just think sometimes we underestimate how much these narratives eat up everything in the regular season. And the Jason Tatum, like, get back narrative, get back at Team USA and Steve Kerr that we're hopefully going to see Wednesday night, chip on his shoulder from not being the finals MVP or even the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. That means a lot to us. I don't know how much it means to the national perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing with Edwards, is, again, like, the Wolves have, it's early, they're 4-3 as we speak right now. I think the whole cat trade threw a sort of wrench in some of their dynamics. So if the team has a little bit of trouble adjusting, I think that's going to hurt his sort of standings. I mean, another name I am interested in, just because we were talking before how good they are, what about Donovan Mitchell? I mean, with how the Cavs are doing, that could be a sleeper dark horse pick for MVP.
I could
MVP.
See him in, like, the 5 spot, though. I just think it's very crowded with a bunch of guys with Jokic winning and winning and winning,
who are
trying to break through. It feels like the same guys every year, but it also feels like, okay, now we've firmly passed the baton from the LeBron Jameses, the Kevin Durants. Yeah. Like, that era is done when you're talking about MVP conversation. This is the new class, and it's more Jokic was this transition guy in terms of going from then to these guys, and which of these younger guys is really going to break through?
The last, 5 has either been Jokic, Giannis, or Embiid. And it feels like, for multiple reasons, it's not going to be any of those guys. So, Yeah, somebody has it almost certainly has to be a fresh face, although Jokic right now averaging a triple-double. But again, for a Nuggets team, that's it feels a little weird right now, so I don't know.
It's also inevitable that he eventually breaks through. It's not like he's never going to win.
Yes, I agree. Break through. I think he's going to have an MVP. I do. It's just a matter of, is it this season with this roster where it's still share the love, share the ball, everybody gets touches, and I don't know that ever really sets up an individual to be MVP above the top three to actually be in that singular spot. Unless, like you said earlier, Justin, it's a do factor, it's a make good, it's a this guy's been good for so long, we owe it to him because it's like a career achievement award.
And I truly do believe that's a thing. Like they will give those make good.
But is it a thing for somebody under 30? I don't know.
That's a good point.
I mean, the other thing that may, I think, be in his favor is the fact that the Celtics did win. They are already front runners, it seems, you know, second in the East right now. I think that's actually a benefit.
Like, they have arrived.
Right, yeah, and I think that's like, nobody's like, oh, can they do it? It's like, oh, they've done it. Now what else can they do? So I think that's sort of a benefit for him.
It shouldn't, but I also do think them winning a championship plays into it. Like, they're going to have more eyes on them. Naturally. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're the best team in basketball. Yeah. They just won the championship. And I was just looking at it. Pretty much after Christmas, they have at least one game a week on national TV. So that's those games that you need to perform well. And that's probably what kind of screwed them a little bit last year is they played almost the entire month of February on national TV. And he had one of his worst months of the season, at least shooting the ball. So, like, you're going to have the opportunity
to
go out there.
It's a double-edged sword.
Right. It's a double-edged sword. You're going to have an opportunity to go out there and showcase yourself on a national TV stage, which is huge. Like, it sounds so stupid when you're talking about considering an MVP, but
it's
that
kind
matters.
Of a stupid award sometimes.
It is kind of a stupid award. But and that all,
it matters a lot, but it's kind of stupid
that
sometimes.
That all absolutely matters, too, is how many eyes are watching you. Like, these voters are, as much as they want to say they're watching every game, they're not watching. You really think they're watching Celtics-Hawks last night?
That's
I mean, they saw the first half.
That's why the narratives scare me. That's why the possibility of these regular season narratives, I think, sometimes can work against Tatum.
Yeah.
One very, like, micro narrative that I wanted to dig in on because it was so present last night is through eight games, Tatum's approach in the first quarter. And it's been really different from past seasons where he's playing the entire first quarter. And last year, particularly in the playoffs and in the second half of the season, at times it looked like they had this agenda going in of Tatum taking his time, picking his spots, Jaylen having more of the strong hand to start the game, and Tatum gaining momentum as it went on. Tatum has been so hot in these first quarters. Of course, the 123-93 win over the Hawks last night, he has a huge first quarter, but overall, he's averaging 13.3 points per quarter and shooting 60%. So he's just coming out with his hair on fire. I really like the approach. I'm wondering what you guys think about it, if this is a look that's sustainable, and if it's why you think the change, they've made that change since last season.
It's the headband. It was a headband last night, right?
it was the Elmer Fudd headband for some of us.
So he had, like, 28 points last night, 26 in the first half. I forget how many threes, but it was some ungodly number.
It was an absurd start. I think he started, like, 4 for 6 from 3.
And then in the first half, he had more threes than Atlanta did.
Yeah.
As a team.
Yeah.
He was 4 to 3.
And I mean, look, some of those are just like, the guy was right there in his face. Perfect defense.
He welcomes that.
It didn't matter. So I think part of that is that, like, last night, one, the Hawks are just not necessarily a really good team at the moment.
No, they're bad. They're going to be annoying. They're going to, like, edge their way into the playoffs again, like they do
Speaking
every year.
Of annoying, that Hawk screech. the score. That is miserable.
But, you know, also the fact that, like, Porzingis isn't there. Brown wasn't there last night. So he naturally sort of took on more of a scoring load. And, but when it works like that, it looks great. And I think we've noticed that the shooting looks better so far early on the season.
Definitely.
So yeah.
It's also crazy how much better he's been than the rest of the field in the first quarter. He's 35 points ahead, the next highest scorer in the first quarter. It's just crazy. And I do like it. And I think, especially with Jason Tatum, when you get him in a rhythm, I think it's huge. And you get that rhythm going early, he kind of can stay in that for the game. And I know he didn't really show that last night. He cooled off a lot in the second half. But it didn't matter because the game was already over.
Right.
So if you're the Celtics, like a team that just has so deep, and you get on this big you get a big lead before the half behind 26 from Jason Tatum, and I know that's not sustainable, but he does lead the league in first quarter scoring and first half scoring, and a lot of that is because he's playing so well in the first quarter. But if you build the big lead, it's just so demoralizing for a team to look up and see you're trailing by 22 or whatever to the Celtics in the first half. And I know, and the Celtics always say it too, Joe Mazzulla really preaches it, no lead's really safe in today's NBA just because of the pace and how many threes teams are shooting. So a 22-point lead is not really safe. But if you're a team like the Celtics, and if they can keep that approach, and last year I thought they did a good job, with the exception of that game in Atlanta, they blew that 30-point lead.
Mm-hmm.
They did a great job of maintaining leads and jumping out, and that's why they won by, what, 20? They set a record for wins by 25 and 30 points. So it's just so demoralizing when he gets off to a fast start like that. So you hope it's sustainable, and I think it is, because once he's in that rhythm, it's hard to knock him out of it.
Yeah.
On the other side, too, I would say, you don't, when we're talking about Jason Tatum being certainly a top three finisher for the MVP award, it's weird to talk about his confidence, but I do think that getting off to these hot starts help his confidence a lot, which then if you combine it with just maybe tweaking the shot selection a little bit, sometimes it's like he thinks he's got the hot hand and he goes a little too far.
He's admitted that too.
Right.
That's self-awareness.
I think it's so early in the season. It's something to keep an eye on that I think is really interesting. If you are looking at the MVP race, I think a game to watch would be Nuggets Timberwolves on Friday. That's going to be an interesting one between Jokic and Anthony Edwards without Carl Anthony Towns. But speaking of teams without somebody, kind of surprising to me going into the game last night that Jaylen Brown sat, because it is Atlanta, a place that he loves to play, his hometown. And then we got the report from Gary Washburn, who said that he went in for second imaging, a second MRI on the hip flexor injury that's been nagging him reportedly since training camp, according to the Boston Globe. So for me, it's too early in the season to get really worked up over imaging and missing back-to-back games. However, I have to say, with all the different storylines that we're looking at tomorrow, with Steve Kerr coming to town after Election Day, the Warriors always having something with the Celtics, and of course, just the Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown wanting to prove something against Team USA and Steve Kerr and that whole institution. I will be a little bit worried if Jaylen Brown sits tomorrow.
We have no timetable in return, right? Do we?
No, he's just day to day.
Just day to day, yeah. I mean, at this point, like you said, at this point in the season, I think it's mostly like, hey, can this get fixed and stay healthy? It seems like, I mean, he obviously played... He's played most of the season so up to this point.
I thought he looked off in Indiana, though, the Indiana game. He looked a little rickety, a little less explosive.
I mean, look, I can't say I've ever had something like a hip flexor, at least that I know of. It doesn't sound fun. And I mean, like, as a basketball player, that's one of the parts of your body you need the most as any athlete. So I think it's really just like, can you stay as safe, as healthy as possible? And I'm sure, like, he's gonna have the best medical attention that the Celtics can afford, because obviously they'll need him. So I don't think it's a cause for concern just yet, especially this early.
I would sit him. As much as I want him to play against the Warriors.
What if he really, really wants to go?
Of course he does, but you can't risk the long-term health of this team. Especially, like, you're already down Kristaps Porzingis, and I know they're actually like 14-0 or something dating back to last year without Jaylen Brown.
I believe they're
15-0. You need Jaylen Brown. You can't risk this. And just looking ahead, he's already sat two games to end the road trip. The Warriors are the only team between now and November 19th that they're going to play with a winning record. So you have the chance to sit him for, what, eight games?
Or you can let him go.
Or you can let him go and risk it. I mean, you know he's going to want to play. You know he wanted to play in Atlanta. You know he's going to want to play.
That's why I got a little concerned. And then you hear, look, I don't fret over a second MRI. When you get an MRI and it shows something, it's smart. These athletes usually go and get a second opinion. It's just that usually a second opinion doesn't really mean that you love what you saw on the MRI. Yeah,
yeah. And if they do that, where they do sit him, his first game back would be November 19th against Cleveland. Which, hey, that's already a big game.
That's the one you want to see, right? And that's the in-season tournament game, right?
believe it is. Yeah, they are.
The NBA Cup.
The NBA Cup,
right.
The NBA Cup, which we will have
the Redskins,
you know? So much content off of. The last story I wanted to hit on here with you guys is not a Celtics story, but as members of the media, this just is a wild story to me. And I kind of have to side with the athlete here, not the actions taken, but I understand the motivation. Of course, we're talking about the confrontation between Joel Embiid and the Philadelphia Inquirer columnist Marcus Hayes. So Joel Embiid confronted Marcus Hayes following a column in which Hayes talked about both Embiid's son and his late brother, who was named, his son was named after his late brother, Arthur.
Can I just read what he wrote?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Joel Embiid, this is from the column. Joel Embiid consistently points to the birth of his son, Arthur, as the major inflection point in his basketball career. He often says that he wants to be great to leave a legacy for the boy named after his little brother who tragically died in an automobile accident when Embiid was in his first year as a 76er. Well, in order to be great at your job, you first have to show up for work. It goes on and on about how Embiid hasn't played this season. Yeah, so that's rough. That's rough.
Look, being a columnist, a part of it is throwing barbs and having a sharp tongue and being honestly engaging and entertaining to read. But going after a deceased relative...
And his son.
It's a pretty... Yes, but to me, it's almost... I don't know. You're right. Both counts are offensive. There's such a clear line to me that if you cross it, you're inviting confrontation because it's more than hurting feelings about, I think you're a bad basketball player, or I think that you need to be more available, or I'm annoyed that you're not getting traded, or even just like, I don't like what you posted on Twitter or Instagram or something like that. It's about a deceased relative in your son.
He could have articulated what he was trying to say without leaving, like without mentioning the family. There was absolutely no reason for that. Like what he was saying was just, there was no reason to bring that up. But I'm with Joel Embiid. Like I know you can't hit somebody and violence is never the option.
Yeah, so what happened was he went into the locker room after there was a confrontation. He shoved him. Joel Embiid shoved Marcus Hayes. There were some profanities. Joel Embiid said reportedly, the next time you bring up my dead brother and my son, you're going to see what I'm going to do to you, what I'm going to have to do and live with the consequences.
Yeah.
So obviously got extremely heated.
Is there a better way PR could have handled this though? Like 100%. Maybe have them meet in a room, opposite sides, team security, let them hash it out. Like the first time,
well, this is where
it's in a locker room.
This is where it gets really tricky because, look, across the board, whether it's NFL locker rooms, NBA locker rooms, media members are trying to maintain the case that we should be in these spaces with access to athletes. And so on the one hand, I'm sure that PR thought about it and goes, it's not a great look if somebody writes a very negative column about our star and now we're not going to have them in the locker room when he comes in. So how do you handle that? How do you kind of engineer that as a PR person? I think they're caught in just as difficult a place as everybody else.
And what what happened was a disservice to basically everybody involved. Like, obviously, you shouldn't be getting physical with reporters, especially at a time when a lot of journalists are actually under real threat in their everyday jobs, whether that's here or abroad. But also for, like, I don't know how an editor let this through. Like, and I know, like, you know, when you get into like the politics of journalism, like columnists have a lot of power. Yeah, a lot more carte blanche than other folks do.
My experience when I was at a newspaper, there were certain columnists where it didn't matter if it was grammatical.
Yeah.
You do not touch their copy.
Right.
Especially a sports columnist. Now, I'm not familiar enough with the Philly market to know how much sway Marcus Hayes has or how much of a platform, you know, if he's a really big name there, I'm sorry. But I can imagine, you know, we all know the legendary names around Boston media where it would go, you don't touch it.
You don't edit them that way. Yeah. And look, I mean, we all know being around the Celtics, whether that's in the, you know, at the games, at the post game media, a lot of NBA Celtics folks and NBA players are really annoyed with having to deal with the press, you know, on a constant basis. And I would be too. Like, I don't want to, like, that would kind of suck if you had to talk to somebody after every game, win or lose, a lot of the same questions. And so that's like one level. But then when you take it up to like, they feel like the criticism is unfair. And in this case, involving family members, mm-hmm. it hurts everybody else. Because then why should either Embiid or any other members of the Sixers go into any interaction with a member of the press in good faith after something like this?
It's just such a clear personal attack that is over the line to me that, again, it's just a judgment mistake that I can't understand. Again, I don't know what I would do if I was in that locker room and I saw that confrontation. I'd probably be like very overwhelmed.
That's a big scary dude too.
Right, yeah. But if you think about it from the perspective that somebody wrote this about Jason Tatum and Deuce and somebody from Tatum's personal life, he would be this is not like a Joel Embiid specific thing. I think any professional athlete and quite frankly any person would be so protective of their family and protective of their child and protective of the memory of a loved one that it would be a total FU situation. And I get that. It's just, I don't know. I don't, overall, my takeaway is that it really, these like little individual cases, it's really hard when I think PR members, athletes, particularly the group of guys who are on the Celtics right now, and media members are all working to maintain this very respectful dynamic where we can be critical of the basketball. And sometimes, if it calls for it, we can even be critical about actions off the court or dynamics when it's justified. But a low blow and a personal attack like that does so much from one individual that I think crumbles that whole structure. And it as you said, it does nobody any favors. It's just it's just rough to see.
Has anybody seen any video from it? Because it feels like this is like Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game where like there's so many accounts of it, but no actual video evidence.
And
with members of the press in the room having nobody get video.
Everybody's got a phone up or something.
I bet it was probably scrubbed too.
Yeah.
Like it seemed like they were doing their best to really conceal the situation.
Like play it down.
Really play
quiet,
it down.
So quiet it. Yeah.
I bet you they did their best to scrub that video. I'm sure one exists somewhere, but if you put it out there, you're probably going to lose your credential. So you're not going to cost your company that or yourself that. So I guarantee that video exists somewhere. Or somebody's got the audio recording at least. There's some evidence of this confrontation, but it seems like the Sixers and the NBA both really tried their best to sweep this and not really completely eliminate the situation, but try to really keep the details under wraps.
Which is also wrong. Like, it happened, and you have members of the press there who are there to cover the happenings of the team. Like, that feels wrong to be like, if that's what happens.
Well, it's just kind of unusual because it's like, okay, we got video, remember, was it last training camp or the training camp before when Draymond Green went after...
Well, that was security
Jordan
footage,
Poole,
right? And
that got leaked from the team.
Right.
Like, and so it's not like it's, because it's a violent circumstance. You can use different gray areas of violence, but a violent circumstance.
What the video policy is in the locker room.
Like, true.
It's probably a lot different. And that might be, the NBA probably has its own laws and legislations by that, but teams also probably have their own thing. Like, look at Gillette Stadium, for example. Like, in that back hallway, there's no cameras, no footage, no nothing.
Things are getting a lot more complicated.
It's a lot more, so, I mean, maybe that's not the greatest comparison.
Yeah, but it goes towards this overall, like, I think, for the most part, the press and the athletes and the PR communications teams, like, nobody wants an adversarial relationship. We all love the game and we all want to be able to have great content out of it and tell cool stories and also be very representative about what is happening and what we can find out. And so, I don't know. To me, it's a really, really unfortunate incident and a rare one where I think I tend to side with media and going, hey, you know, that's a reporter trying to do the job. In this case, it was just... woof. It was just really terrible.
Just based on what I've seen and what I've read online, it's really been hard to see anyone.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
One really sticking up for the columnist here.
Yeah.
It's just completely out of bounds. Like, you got to know better. There's one thing being critical and doing your job as a columnist. Like you said, you have to have kind of that sharp tongue. But, yeah, that's just way out of bounds and well-deserved
for
that. And he will probably face some sort of suspension, I'd assume, from the league if and when he comes back. But there's going to be some disciplinary
action. Yeah, so the columnist is actually counteracting what he wanted, which was more Embiid playing.
Now he's probably – I mean, I would assume there's a suspension of some sort.
I don't know. It's just again, rough. I want to have as much access as possible selfishly, and I want players to be open to talking, and I don't want players to think we're the enemy, and so it's
that is the narrative painted, unfortunately.
It's tough. But we're lucky that honestly I do think this group of Celtics is pretty open to talking and their media responsibilities and all of that stuff, in my experience.
Very. And it's changed so much. Like, who would have thought 2 years ago that Joe Mazzulla would be the most entertaining interview on the Celtics? Like, you would have never thought that his first year.
In Boston.
Yeah, in Boston,
truly.
Right? So,
God.
Starts with that, but I
halfway
I agree.
Through the season, we're going to have to do, like, a grab bag of Mazzulla quotes.
Oh, yes.
We're going to do something like
There's
that.
There's so many. Incredible just this stuff. Year alone. All He's right. really leaning into it.
Well, guys, happy Election Day. Go out and vote. Do your civic duty, and we will be Turp and I will be at the Warriors game, so we'll have content for you from there. Esteban, we'll see you next week, I'm sure.
Yeah.
You've got some news responsibilities for GBH, so stay safe. Looking forward to reading and hearing everything that you put out. This is Slammed. If you guys enjoy this podcast, please like, subscribe, follow. Find us at SlamPod on Twitter. Follow all of our accounts. We have many, many pods a week, and we will all throughout the regular season and the postseason.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.